and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition of a game of what ifs, a game of missed execution, as Minnesota falls at home on senior day to the Big Ten West champions, the Northwestern Wildcats, 24-14. And before we bring in my second cousin here, Luke, do you want to give the folks a message from our sponsor?
Yeah, again, the Goal Line Club has sponsored the 2018 season of Gopher Gridiron Podcast. I will say this, they've been a great partner. If you're interested in joining, head over to thegoallineclub.org, sign up, be a part of it. They have some great events coming up, including a luction, or it's actually not a luction. It's going to be an evening event about recruiting, which we'll talk a little bit more about later on signing day. So again, goallineclub.org.
All right, so let's bring in my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you, and are you are you as disappointed as I am? Because that game was there for the taking all the way into the fourth quarter, but Minnesota just couldn't get it right offensively, execution-wise. But how are things going for you this afternoon?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you having me back. And, yeah, it's I think frustrating would be the word I would use, the timing of a bad game for the offense and bad execution and just way too many mistakes.
All right, so let's get into this. You know, this is just such an interesting game on so many levels. For one reason, the Gophers came into this game a 2-point favorite against the Big Ten West. Big Ten West champions, the Northwestern Wildcats. They ended up losing 24-14. You know, the Gophers have struggled all season defensively. I should really say all Big Ten season they've struggled defensively. That's really been their Achilles heel and what's caused them to lose. They only gave up 24 points against the Wildcats, who are by no means an offensive juggernaut. But that said, I think basically everyone would say it's really the offense that let them down in this game. So I guess, Derek, start with us. I don't even know where to start. Like, what went wrong offensively?
Well, I think that I enjoy talking about schemes and happy to get into it in this game. But ultimately, I think, you know, the execution on the offensive side is what cost them the game. I don't think that things were wildly off from a schematic or play calling standpoint. It's just, you know, too many and the number of different mistakes. It wasn't just sometimes you can point to a couple interceptions or sometimes you can point to a key fumble. I mean, this game kind of had them all. They had drops. They had missed assignments in the offensive line. They had interceptions. They had fumbles. And, you know, with a team like Northwestern who tries to limit mistakes on their end, you can't have that many on your end and expect to win the game, no matter if you're playing home or away. So I think it was execution. From a schematic standpoint, on when the Gophers were on offense, I think the number one thing that factored into their play was that their struggle to handle Northwestern's defensive line stunts and twists. Northwestern is a team that, as you probably could guess, is not going to wow you with their athleticism. They are very solid up front, and I'm not trying to give a backhanded compliment. They execute well. They limit mistakes. They're very solid. They play very tight up front. They play very hard, and they have to compensate in some way. And so they move their defensive line with a lot of twists and a lot of stunts, and that was really a struggle. It gave fits for the Gophers' offensive line all game, in both the run and the pass. In the running game, the Gophers run a zone running scheme, but had trouble picking up some of those stunts and twists. Guys ended up in the backfield. They had some tackles for loss. And then in the passing game, the Gophers love to run the play action, the RPO, which puts you on generally on man blocking. And it's really tough to pick up some of those stunts and twists. That's another part of an offensive lineman's development that comes later. And some of those guys up front, particularly some of the younger guys, I don't get seen a lot of that, and so they struggled. So from a scheme standpoint, I think that was the biggest factor when the Gophers were on offense.
All right, Ryan. You know, I think that you and I probably are somewhat to blame for this game. We talked in the preview about how Tanner Morgan had been, you know, really strong, you know, taking care of the ball, and this was by far his worst showing in all of Big Ten play. You know, the two interceptions, he had three fumbles, only one loss. You know, the numbers weren't great, but this we maybe have to take some blame for here.
Yeah, it's our fault that Tanner Morgan's arm looks like a noodle throughout this entire game, and I was absolutely mystified because of it. I don't know if Tanner Morgan is hurt. I don't know if Tanner Morgan's arm was cold because it was only in the mid-20s out there. But when you watch that game, and especially when you watch it back, the way that those balls were floating and just sitting there time after time after time, all the way up until like the fourth quarter when the ball started to get some more zip on it, it was like I couldn't explain it. And Tanner Morgan's decisions were just not very good. And that's what you have kind of come to expect from these Gopher freshman quarterbacks once the opposing defense gets a scouting report on them. Because you're seeing these Gopher quarterbacks. So you saw Zach Anigstead do well in the non-conference. And then conference time came and things kind of fell apart for him. Well, Tanner Morgan starts out hot in the Big Ten Conference. And now you've seen him kind of come back down to earth, especially in this game. I can't really explain some of the interceptions on what he saw. The first one, he just misses Rashad Bateman on a slant there. Essentially threw it right to the Northwestern defensive back, and then one of the flukiest bounces I've ever seen with it hits the Northwestern defensive back in the chest, deflects then off Rashad Bateman's arm, back onto the defensive back's back of his neck, sits there for a couple seconds before a linebacker is able to dive and make an interception there. On the second one, that may be the worst throw from a Gopher quarterback that I have seen in 2018. I have absolutely zero idea what Tanner Morgan saw. It was a little bit, you know, he's trying to target Tyler Johnson on a deep out, but Northwestern is sitting in zone coverage. If you go back and look at my GIF rewinds that are on Gopher Illustrated, I highlight this play specifically. You can see from the moment the ball is snapped, the play side linebacker there has his eyes fixated on Tanner Morgan as he's dropping into coverage. Tanner Morgan takes the snap, immediately locks on to Tyler Johnson. I have zero idea how we never saw Nate Hall sitting there. And worse yet, he floats the ball. Again, another ball that was just floated there where Tyler Johnson can't make a play on it because the ball's sitting there in space, and it's an interception. And there were just a few other different throws that I thought Tanner Morgan missed. Now, the question for me is going to be, is Tanner Morgan being told not to keep the ball on read option? It would make sense that he was 2 weeks ago because Minnesota literally didn't have a backup quarterback. It was Seth Green. But Zach Anigstead, by all accounts, is now healthy. So why isn't Tanner Morgan keeping the ball on read option? Because you can see how valuable it is to keep the ball just once or twice a game. Looking on the other side of the ball with Clayton Thorson, he absolutely smokes Carter Coughlin on that same motion for a 15-yard touchdown. Then, you know, Northwestern had run that read option just a time or two, but Bowser had been kind of moving the ball on them. So where does Carter's eyes immediately lock onto? Isaiah Bowser. Clayton Thorson's a senior quarterback. He's seen a lot of football, sees that Carter's not respecting him, pulls it. He's wide open for 13 yards or a score. So my question to Derek would be, did you see the same things that I did with Morgan's ball was floating? You know, I guess one of the other bigger things would be, for the second time before the end of a half, Tanner Morgan has an opportunity to, it's essentially throw a Hail Mary. Yeah, this is the second time that the ball has weakly floated 40 yards and it just died. And I don't really have an answer for what's going on with his arm, but the question to Derek would be, did you see the same thing with Tanner's arm? What did you think about his decision-making, and then how does he potentially improve with Minnesota's got one final game guaranteed here on the schedule?
Yeah, it seemed like you know, where he's been good previously, we've talked about just him being sharp. And I think this game, we didn't see that for whatever reason. And I don't have any more answers than you do. If he's dealing with any sort of nagging upper body injury, or if it was just an off day for him, if the weather was a factor at all, but he definitely just was not sharp on his passes. And then in terms of, you know, some of the reads and the second interception you talked about, I think you're spot on in that. Defensive coaches in the Big Ten are very highly compensated. They're at the top of their game. And they look at everything. They look at tendencies. And one of the things we talked about is the Gopher quarterbacks don't typically check down. And so if you're a linebacker and you're in a zone and you have the flat and you're taught that, hey, this quarterback does not have a tendency to check off. So if you have the shallow flat, and you see him hang onto the ball, drift back and take away the wide receiver out or the medium flat. And so that's exactly what he did. I just think he, you know, to answer your question about how he never saw the linebacker, I think he's looking at the safety in the corner the whole time. And he's dismissive of the linebacker because he thinks he has shallow flats, so he doesn't see him drift back. And, you know, the throw was such that he had to have not seen him because the ball ended up going, you know, right to the defender. So it was a, yeah, it was a day for him that was tough in that couple of missed reads. You know, his one thing I would just want to comment on is I think he struggled at times. The offensive line, you know, wasn't clean protection, and his pocket presence at times wasn't the greatest. It's interestingly, people talk about that Tanner's better with his feet, better with his legs, a little bit better runner than Zach. But I would argue that Zach did a pretty good job when he was in there with his pocket presence, and that when he felt pressure, he tended to drift sometimes and he tried to escape things with his arm, which got him into trouble. But at the same time, he was able to feel the pressure and get out of there quickly. And sometimes I think Tanner, you know, on that Hail Mary at the end of the first half, he was able to step up and get out of there, but his timing was off. And I'm not so sure that he was throwing to the end zone, which was a mistake because the clock was going to expire. So you're not in a catch and run situation, but it seemed to me he was throwing to the player in the middle of the field who was at the 10 or 15 yard line, rather than just gunning it downfield into the end zone. So just, again, several things. I'm not trying to jump on him, just an off day for him and just didn't look as sharp as he had previously.
You know, one thing you brought up there, Derek, that I heard that I was going to ask about was, you know, how much is this offense missing really a pass catcher out of the backfield? And, you know, I've never really thought that, these quarterbacks aren't really checking down. But you look at a guy, like Mo Ibrahim yesterday, was very successful catching the ball out of the backfield, ended up with, pardon me while I look this up, he ended up with two catches for 25 yards, you know, an average of 12.5 with a long of 15. It seems like that seems to be kind of the missing layer in some ways that could help open up this passing game even a bit more. Can you speak to, you know, is this a strategic decision or is this just a tendency for these quarterbacks?
Well, I think that with the offense that they, you start with what they want to do in the passing game. And I think that their strength and what they want to do is throw to the wide receivers, throw the RPO slants, throw the posts over the middle. They've been developing a little bit more of an out game, a bubble screen game. And then when they have single coverage, they throw things like back shoulder fades and goal routes. But they definitely are targeting the wide receivers. That's where I'm sure the coaching staff feels that their talent is best, utilizes throwing to the wide receivers. But to your point, Luke, they really haven't used the tight ends other than a few play action dump passes and the running backs. They really haven't utilized them in the passing game much. And I think that's just, that is intentional and they're trying to go to their strengths. But this is something that when you have an inexperienced quarterback or in this case quarterbacks, you haven't developed that layer yet. And so when teams start scheming for that now, we've talked about Kirk Shiraka's made some really nice adjustments in previous games to when teams try to take away that RPO slant. I think it's fair to say that's another part of the offense they have to develop. So you have to keep countering the defenses. They want to take some of those things away. You have to come back with, they're keying on some of our wide receivers and some of our wide receiver routes. We've got to come back and utilize our tight ends and running backs more in the passing game. And I don't think overnight you're going to switch from A to B, but just a few times a game is going to keep them honest and I think break some of those tendencies.
I've gotten a lot of questions about this as well, as why hasn't Minnesota, I think that's the biggest thing I get every week, is why doesn't Minnesota use their tight ends, or why didn't they use them specifically against Northwestern? Well, if you go back and watch, well, what happened? They used Sam Schluter, number 48, as a glorified tight end, as an H-back, whatever you want to call him, as a six offensive lineman trying to open some things up in that inside zone running game. Now, again, Derek talked about how maybe the communication wasn't as great as it had been in previous games with Minnesota trying to figure out these different stunts that the front seven for Northwestern was throwing at them. But Kirk Shiraka believed, and that's what he tried to go out with, is that Sam Schluter as a run blocker is better than what we'd seen from Keith Beebe. It's just a different, bigger body out there trying to combat what was a power defensive line. It wasn't a speed kind of, but there was a lot of big bodies on that defensive line for Northwestern. And that's where it's tough to kind of use all these tight ends Whereas, you know, you look at Tyler Johnson and you look at Rashad Bateman, for example. Tyler Johnson is 90 yards away from a single season receiving record at Wisconsin next week. He needs a tight end to tie Ron Johnson and I believe it's Ernie Wheelwright atop the single season touchdown list. He needs 90 yards to pass Ron Johnson on top of the receiving yards list. And I think he needs 14 catches to tie Eric Decker. He's now number three all time and like number three all time and number two. So if Tyler Johnson has an average Tyler Johnson game, which is somewhere around, say, seven catches for 95 yards and a score, he's going to be the leading receiver all time single season wise. Rashad Bateman needs, I believe, just a couple more catches and just a couple more yards to be the freshman all time single season receiving record for yards and catches as well. So it's not like you want to take the ball out of these guys' hands, but in that same breath, we've seen Demetrius Douglas and Chris Ottman Bell kind of disappear at times here in the last couple of games. Now, Coe Keith and Colton Beebe aren't exactly the pass-catching tight end types like a Jake Paulson is, and that's where I think you see next year with Brevin Spann Ford, someone that was a dominant pass catcher in high school at St. Cloud Tech, a Division I basketball player, just a different skill set than what we're used to seeing from that tight end position. I think you're going to see some different things there. But the final thing I want to touch on, and I led off with this offensively, was just the empty trips into opponent territory. You can't expect to beat the Big Ten West champion when you drive four different times into NU territory and don't come out with a single point. And then you look it up at the end of the game and you lose by 10, and you're thinking, well, what if we scored just a touchdown and got two field goals there? How different is this game? Well, and you potentially might have won. You have Tanner Morgan throwing an interception. You go for it on fourth and one, where Derek, before we kick it to defense, I'm going to want you to talk about that fourth and one call and what you kind of saw there. Emmett Carpenter misses a chippy, a 38-yard field goal, and then Minnesota can't figure out their clock management before half as B.J. Fleck burned all three of his timeouts before the final drive there. That's what I look at and say, I don't think it's Kirk Soraka's play calling. I don't think it's anything like that. I mean, I think the funniest thing that I've seen on Gopher Illustrated and in my mentions is folks are calling for Kirk Soraka's head. You guys are out of your flipping mind. You're out of your mind. We're seeing single-season point records in Big Ten play here. I mean, you look at Minnesota's – coming into this game, Minnesota had averaged over 35 points at home in Big Ten play. You look at their point output since Iowa. They scored 31 and 14 against Ohio State, where this exact same thing happened, where they go to Ohio State and they have so many empty trips into territory because of various different reasons. They scored 28 points against Nebraska, 38 against Indiana, 31 against Illinois, 41 against Purdue. And then they have 14 last week because Northwestern deserves some credit here, folks. They've won 14 of their last 15 Big Ten games. This isn't a terrible team. This isn't Illinois. This is a good Big Ten defense that Minnesota moved the ball on. They just couldn't execute. So, Derek, you want to talk about that fourth and one play with Seth Green and the Wildcat, and then we can start talking a little bit of defense.
Well, yeah, I just want to add one more thing, to the point about getting back to the execution. And I know we're talking about could they have used the tight ends, could they have used the running backs, and I think that's a fair point. But I just don't want people to lose sight of the fact that the RPO passing was there. What Northwestern was doing on defense was they weren't necessarily loading the box, but when they saw run action, they were committing everything to the run. So they were bringing guys up, going heavy run defense, which didn't leave play action and RPO open. The problem was the execution on it. So you saw they were able to click on those, but just not consistently. Again, the tip ball, an interception, a guy comes through on a twist, gets in the quarterback space, you get a sack, you get a fumble. So schematically, I think the RPO was there. So it wasn't a question of they were just calling the same thing and it wasn't working from a scheme standpoint because of something Northwestern was doing. So I agree with your point there about the play calling. And again, we just have to keep reminding ourselves it goes back to execution. So, but on that note, the fourth and one, Gophers got stopped. Essentially what happened on that play is you had two inside linebackers. The front side inside linebacker ended up walking outside the defensive end and came crashing down on run action and stopped the Wildcat zone play. The center guard and center, those three have to account for the one technique and the two inside linebackers. What ended up happening on that play, I'm not on the field. I don't know what the blocking call was. You either had the wrong blocking call or you had the correct blocking call and the guard picked the wrong linebacker. Because what happened was on the snap, the center ended up taking the one technique and both guards ended up combo blocking to the backside linebacker. Nobody took account. Nobody was accountable for the front side linebacker, and he came through untouched. So it was a missed assignment. Again, I don't know if it was the blocking call or the post snap assignment, but he came through running free and was able to stop him in the backfield. So again, another execution thing. I don't think necessarily it was a bad play call. They just didn't get it. It was another thing that Northwestern did with their front seven that gave the Gophers fits. And on that play, they ended up coming up with a big play for Northwestern.
All right, I'll end with this. When it comes to offense, the thing that stuck out to me is, the Gophers, for all their miscues, had opportunities and just ultimately didn't capitalize, right? And that's the risk that Northwestern takes with the strategy, with the style they play. And this is somewhat what frustrated us with the Kill and Clays regime, right? Was that they played really good defense. Offensively, they weren't phenomenal, but they did just well enough, to win some ball games. And I think this was an instance where Northwestern defensively, I don't know if it was put Minnesota into tough positions or they just didn't execute. It could have been a combo of both. But at the end of the day, this strategy is working quite well for Northwestern and kudos to them. I just don't want to take anything away from them. They're finding a way to be 7-1 in conference play. I mean, Ryan said 15 games, 15 Big Ten wins in the past 2 years. That's phenomenal, and kudos to them. And they deserve to be the Big Ten West champions.
One more thing, Luke, to that point. You talk about them having to compensate somewhere and take some gambles on defense, and they did that. And the problem was the Gopher offense was just never able to make them pay for it. On Bateman's second drop, Northwestern ran an inside linebacker and a safety blitz on that play, so they literally had nobody in the middle of the field. Morgan was able to see that through a nice ball to Bateman. If Bateman catches that ball and is able to beat the corner, now he catches it and the corner tackles him, it's a 12-yard gain. He catches it and is able to beat the corner as a touchdown because the safety on that side of the field blitz. And to your point, Luke, they've had success doing things. They gamble at the right time. They took a gamble there. Gophers reacted to it well, but weren't able to execute. And that was probably the difference of 6 points.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to make sure that we give them kudos because they deserve it absolutely. So real quick before we talk defense. If people aren't aware, there is another recruiting class coming in. This is the current state of college football. Every year, there are new players being recruited constantly. If you're a member of Gopher Illustrated, where Ryan works, he actually works for 247. If you are a frequent member or a frequent participant in Gopher Illustrated, you'll know that signing day is approaching rapidly, and the Goal Line Club is sponsoring a great event that's coming up. If you're interested in that event, I'll allow Ryan to give some more details, but it's $30 for members of the Goal Line Club, $40 for non-members. It's going to be Wednesday, December 19th. The doors are going to open at 5 p.m. There'll be a dinner buffet, a light dinner buffet from 5 to 6, and then a program starting about 6. There'll be a cash bar, etc. If you're interested, go to goalineclub.org. Registration closes December 14th.
This is kind of the Christmas for a guy like me where it's a month away now from National Signing Day. This is the Signing Day Social. I think this year they call it the Signing Day Report with PJ Fleck. This is where a bunch of Gopher Illustrated members will get together potentially before you go to Buffalo Wild Wings across the street. You're able to meet other Gopher fans. You're able to meet other Gopher Illustrated members, put a face to a username, and then you're able to come on over to TCF Bank Stadium and listen to PJ Fleck talk about his incoming recruiting class. Now, Luke and I are still trying to push for potentially one further event that we're still waiting to hear back from, and maybe we'll have some news by the time we record here for Wisconsin. But if you want to hear from PJ Fleck about the incoming class, which as we stand here today, I believe is higher rated than what the one was last year, and you're seeing the instant results from that on the offensive side of the ball, if you want to learn more about it, head to goallineclub.org.
All right, so defensively, we do have to touch on their performance. giving up 24 points, a pretty good effort from them. They definitely got put into some pretty tough situations. Like, for instance, I wanted to bring up the fact the second touchdown by Northwestern. That was a touchdown that was really a blunder by the special teams, put the defense in a pretty tough situation. Again, they were caught off with short fields multiple times, due to turnovers, etc. But I did think that this crew played well, and Derek, I mean, I think it's very obvious that Blake Cashman was the shining star this week for the Gopher defense.
Yeah, I think ultimately I thought the defense played well enough to win, especially when you consider the turnovers, like you said, putting non-advantageous positions. I thought the front seven played really good. I thought the defensive line was solid. The linebackers were exceptional. I don't know that there's much I can add to, Blake Cashman's performance. Talk about Blake Cashman's performance. It was the best game of his career, in my opinion. He was around the ball on every single play, pretty much run or pass. We've talked about it previously, but I think they found something on defense, and that, keep it simple for these linebackers, keep them in zone coverage, they're able to react to the run faster. And that was definitely the case in this game. When they were in zone, able to react to the run better, things worked out well. They were able to take away some of those underneath passes. At the end of the first half, the Gophers ended up tying the score. And I thought that the Gophers coaches made a conscious decision to get really aggressive, because I think they wanted the ball back one more time and try to get some momentum and score before halftime. And it ended up burning them. The Gophers blitzed a lot on that next series. And unfortunately for the Gophers, Northwestern was able to pick those up, and the quarterback and put them in man coverage, and the quarterback was able to pick them apart kind of going down the field. So, that was a strategic decision that was made. They tried to get aggressive, and it didn't come through. But all in all, I thought, again, they played well enough to win. It was nice to see leading up to the Wisconsin game that the run defense was there, that they're in short yardage situations, were able to pack it in and, be able to stop them in some key short, third down, fourth down, short situations.
I think obviously the headliner is Blake Cashman coming off the best game of his career against Purdue, just runs through that brick wall and has a 20 tackle game where it's, it wasn't one of those games where you looked up at the stat sheet at the end of the day and it was like, huh, well, I guess Blake Cashman had 20 tackles. How'd that happen? No, it was, wow, Blake Cashman feels like he's been on the round. He's got like 30 tackles or so. Ends up, I think, with 20 total tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss. And now in the season, he's over 100 total tackles, 15 tackles for loss. The dude's just been a one-man wrecking crew with Joe Rossi, just because it's been simplified. Derek talked about the more zone coverage that Minnesota's been playing. Just simplifying things for Blake Cashman. A lot of the same things we talked about last week on how tell Blake Cashman he's either got to do A or B, and that's all he's got to worry about, and then they can go from there. Well, that's what Joe Rossi's been doing, and Blake Cashman has been trusting his instincts, and you're seeing him use that to his advantage. You saw it on the fourth down stop there that Minnesota shows double A gap. They also have two linebackers about 2 yards off in the B gap, and then they have two defensive ends on the outside. So you have, you're showing six for only five guys to block you. Well, Minnesota ends up bringing all six. The defensive end on the bottom side of the screen there, you can, again, go watch it on Gopher Illustrated and give rewind, ends up fanning out. The right guard ends up taking Jerry Gibson on a double team with the center. That leaves Blake Cashman one-on-one with a running back, which doesn't go well for the running back. He swings and misses, and then Blake Cashman uses that legit speed to close on Clayton Thorson for the sack. I feel like we're talking about a 2015 podcast, folks, where we're talking about a Gopher offense that didn't play well enough, a defense that played well enough to win. This is really one of the first Big Ten games you can kind of talk about that and say, at least the Gopher defense has made significant strides in 2 weeks. I mean, they even made significant strides last week against Purdue, and that's where we're looking at a guy like Joe Rossi right now. He's making it known that he wants to be the defensive coordinator. Now, I'm not saying he said that publicly, because that's not true. He hasn't. But what he's putting on tape is, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do, and I trust what I'm seeing on tape, and he's got this defense playing as fast as we've seen. Now, the plays that killed Minnesota, you saw that cover two bust and the Jordan Howden missed play where it was a 68-yard gain. Jordan Howden thinks he can come over the top there and make it an interception. At the last moment, he realizes, I shouldn't have taken that angle. I'm not fast enough for that. Northwestern's receiver gets it, 68 yards, and then it makes it a two-score game, which, with the way Minnesota's offense had been playing, was insurmountable. But this defense continues to play well, and that's where you kind of project that forward to a Wisconsin team next week. This Wisconsin team continues to be as average as I've ever seen it in terms of covering the team. In my 8 years, you're looking at a Wisconsin team that, with Jack Cohen as their quarterback, has significant issues moving the ball. It took one of the best performances we've seen from a running back all year in Jonathan Taylor, going 330 rushing yards and three touchdowns in triple overtime to beat that Purdue team, where Purdue blew a two-score lead in the fourth quarter. If this defense wants to come to play again for the third straight week, and you're banking on an offense that still put up 14 points with four different drives into opponent territory that resulted in 0 points, I don't know. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting kind of a game in Madison on Saturday with where Wisconsin is at injury-wise, with the way Minnesota's defense has been playing. And if I want to bank on anything, I want to bank on a rebound performance from this offense going against the Wisconsin defense that, especially in the secondary, once again, is very, very banged up.
All right. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we've touched on the turnovers. If the defense did have one gripe, it was their inability to force a turnover again. That's probably where we need to give credit to Northwestern, their ability, having a fifth year senior quarterback in Clayton Thorson. He had a really steady game, but their inability to turn over the ball, probably was the difference in the ball game with the Gophers' three turnovers. It's just not a recipe for success. I guess defensively, the only other thing, I thought that Chris Williamson had another nice game. He seems to be improving as a player. Ryan, one question for you. I thought for a little bit there he maybe wasn't going to play. Is this the most miraculous recovery that we've ever heard of, or what happened there?
Well, according to some folks that listened to our preview podcast, I said that Chris Williamson and somebody else was out, and I never said that. Yet folks are just trying to put words in my mouth, which, what's new? And then blame me for their inaccuracies. So Chris Williamson had a hell of a game. It's third straight game that he's played physical. Now, Derek, I would be curious to get your thoughts here on Chris Williamson's sack. I am unclear whether that was a slot corner blitz or if Chris Williamson was just reading the tight end or running back there, saw that he stayed in, and he's like, well, I'm going to send it and see if I can't get a sack.
Yeah, I don't know either. I know it was zone coverage. He didn't have man coverage on that player. He probably would have stayed out, not let the tight end release. My guess is that he read it and decided to come late. I don't think, from the looks of it, I don't think it was a delayed blitz. I think he checked a couple things and then decided just to come late when he saw the quarterback was hanging onto the ball. I mean, ultimately, I don't know the call, but I know it was in zone. And, and he made a good play on it. It's nice to see. He's just getting more and more comfortable. You know, we talked about how well he played against Purdue and had a little bit of swagger to him. And you could see that in this game as well. He's the game, I think, to use the cliche, I think the game is slowing down for him a little bit. He's able to, be comfortable with some of the offensive sets he's seeing. And again, it's just like the linebackers you talked about. When he's comfortable diagnosing the formation and the pre and post snap, the play, he's able to play more fast and just make plays. And even if it's in coverage. So another nice game for him. And I also thought, Jamal Teague, I thought he had a good game. I think he's getting better on defense, and they're going to need, against Wisconsin, it'd be nice if they had three or four more defensive tackles to rotate in against the run. O.J. Smith was a guy that was made to play against Wisconsin, and I don't know, Ryan, if they'll go or not, but they're going to miss him if he doesn't, because they're going to need some run-stopping D tackles for next week.
So, yeah, you know, I was actually going to ask about Jamal Teague because you saw a you've seen a number of younger defenders get in. You know, I've seen like a Jamal Teague, a Boye Mafe. I don't know, Ryan, if you can pick up some other younger guys. I'm really bad at keeping track of years on guys. But Derek, I was wondering your thought. You touched on Teague, what you thought on like Boye Mafe. You know, he's a redshirt freshman. Any other thoughts on some of these younger defenders that are getting in?
Yeah, I think those two that you mentioned getting better. It's fun to see that improvement with the young guys, you know, almost game by game. This is one that it seemed to me, I mean, I could be wrong. I didn't chart the plays, but it seemed like Jamal Teague wasn't rotating in quite as much at the beginning of the game. But when he was in there, he was really having an impact. And by the end of the game, it seemed like he was rotating in a lot more. So I don't know if the coaches saw that, you know, like I did and decided to give him more snaps as the game went on, because again, against the run, I thought he was pretty stout. And you know, the game script dictated that Northwestern was going to try and control the ball in the second half, and so you needed guys to try and get penetration, take on double teams, and just be stout against the run. And so I think he was able to bring that. Boye Mafe has been nice to see, you know, starting last week in the Purdue game. Ryan's talked about how they're looking for anything in a pass rush besides Carter Coughlin. And I think he's developed some moves, and he's able to get some pressures and provide some, you know, at least provide some game film for the opposing offensive line to have to consider, okay, this guy's pretty decent. We can't forget about him. We can't just put everything on Carter Coughlin. So, you know, he's young, he's athletic and developing, and it's fun to see these guys game by game continue to get better.
We talked about the Blake Cashman sack on fourth down there, where if Blake Cashman was picked up by the running back there, Boye Mafe destroyed the left tackle on an inside move to where Clayton Thorson would have still been sitting there, and Boye would have likely gotten the sack there. So that's what you want to see from these young guys. And I talked about this on Gopher Illustrated back in the spring. I was talking to some people that work with the defensive line every day. I asked them, who is the most improved on the defensive line? And they said Boye Mafe without question. Boye Mafe also had the longest way to go, and he still has a long way to go. But if that light bulb can go off for him, he's going to be an absolute force. And you've seen the glimpses. It's not been flashes. I don't think it's been quite necessarily that much, but you've seen glimpses. Whereas Boye Mafe is starting to figure out a little bit, and if Minnesota can get him to figure it out as we look forward to that 2019 season, Carter Coughlin's going to need help. And if Boye Mafe can provide some of that, that's going to be great to see. And then with Jamal Teague, I don't understand why he's not playing more snaps, especially against these run-heavy teams. I mean, we saw some 14 personnel at times from Northwestern, and yet we're running out Sam Renner there instead of Jamal Teague. I can't really explain that one, but you know, you look forward here to Wisconsin. You're going to need Jamal Teague. We'll see if O.J. Smith ever returns. It's been about the fifth or sixth or seventh straight week now. I've lost track that O.J. Smith has been out. And the last thing we heard is it's a head injury, and so that's going to give me a lot of pause. But I also want to give Joe Rossi some credit to where you saw Minnesota get into some 3-4. I think it was second quarter. Northwestern was driving, and what does Joe Rossi do? He goes to some 3-4, or he puts in Jamal Teague as your nose. He has Teon Devers and Carter Coughlin standing up on the outside, Blake Cashman, Thomas Barber on the inside. Minnesota ends up stalling out that drive and getting a punt. Just seeing different things from Joe Rossi is very encouraging, and getting this defense to execute as well as they've been is very encouraging as well.
All right, let's talk a little bit of special teams. We touched a little bit on the blunder that they had on kick coverage. This wasn't probably the game that Emmett Carpenter was envisioning on his senior day. You know, missed a 38-yarder. That's one that you kind of expect him to make. He missed that, I believe, right as you're looking from the kicker's perspective. Otherwise, you know, from the kick return perspective, this might be a hot take, but I'm starting to get really comfortable with Demetrius Douglas in that both kick and punt returner position. I don't need him to be super dynamic, but he's been pretty steady with the ball for the most part. Additionally, making pretty good decisions. And you know, he has shown a little bit of wiggle where he can be decisive and you know, find the yardage that might be needed to give to his offense. Is that too hot of a take, Ryan?
I don't think that's flaming hot at all. I thought it was interesting. Northwestern strategy was when they would kick off, they would kick it off to like the 10, expecting Demetrius Douglas to call for a fair catch there. I never did.
I don't know. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't know that that was the strategy because I haven't seen them play all year. I don't think the kicker can kick it. Like literally,
their kicker was out in the second half. Their kicker was literally out for the game.
Yeah.
So the guy who kicked the extra point there or the short field goal in the fourth quarter was their punter.
Like, oh,
Fitzgerald
really?
So that's where maybe it was that they just didn't have a kickoff guy because he was injured. But Demetrius Douglas made him pay. If they kick it to the 10-yard line, and on the day he averaged 26 yards of return, you're getting the ball to 35. Now, again, unfortunately for Minnesota, they couldn't execute when it mattered. They have four empty drives into opponent territory, but you can't really say too much about Demetrius Douglas. He even had a 19-yard punt return on the day. Now, I also know folks are going to be on me about Jacob Herbers. Jacob Herbers had the punt of his life.
Yeah.
After having another signature Jacob Herbers punt where it goes 38 yards and it's fair caught and there's no return and everybody's supposedly happy. But he has a 58-yarder that also rolls out inside the four. Like, that's, you're never going to punt better than that, Jacob Herbers. Take that, put it into your portfolio, and then walk away.
All right, so you know, the Gophers still have an opportunity to get bowl eligible. We've said all year that that was the goal. I believe, too, that not only would this be a massive win for PJ Fleck, but I think it would also be his first Big Ten road win. You can maybe correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan. But maybe, Derek, while we have you, just speak to the importance. I know you've done this before on this podcast, but speak to the importance of this game, from a rivalry standpoint as a player.
Well, it's this one, I think, to the players. I mean, I can't speak for all the guys there now, but I think for the players, when I was around the program, the Wisconsin rivalry is the biggest. I know the Iowa rivalry for some people is bigger or has, they have a personal attachment to it in some way. But, being that there are so many, I think what happens is there are so many people born and raised in Wisconsin that end up coming to the Twin Cities market to live and work. I think that fuels a lot of rivalry. I like to tease those people. I haven't lived in Wisconsin for 30 years, but they still somehow are Wisconsin fans. So I think that fuels the rivalry. It does mean a lot to the players. You have kids from Wisconsin that come over and play for the Gophers and vice versa. So I know that people have been down because it's been so one-sided over the last decade and a half, and some people are questioning, whether it is a rivalry. So I guess if your definition is that, it's a back and forth, throw the records out the window, anybody can win any year, that, maybe hasn't been that hot the last few years. But again, from an emotional standpoint, a very big deal to the players. It's tough when you go to Madison. That's a tough place to play. I know that the Gophers probably have as good a chance this year, to compete and win the game as they have in a number of years. But I don't think you can discount the fact that it's in Madison. It's very tough to win there. So that being said, I've got to stand behind my words from previous podcasts in that I think the Gophers' defense, I think, matches up well with Wisconsin's offense. I do think that they have some of the personnel and schemes and people to compete with Wisconsin offensively. Hopefully, injuries, they're able to not get injured, stay healthy. They're going to need everybody to stop the run. And so if they can do that, as a matchup, I like that matchup. And then, like Ryan said, you're going to need the offense to bounce back. You need them to come back and execute a lot better than they did against Northwestern and, get some explosive plays and move the chains.
I think the last two times Minnesota's gone to Madison, they've been leading by double digits in the first half, and then they would just choke it away in the second half. Whereas everybody here knows that Minnesota has not won the Axe in 14 years, going on 15 years here next Saturday. And Minnesota hasn't won in Madison since 1994. I was 2 years old. Now, I'm not saying as of I sit here today that Minnesota is going to go in there and win, but I will continue to say this is as average of a Wisconsin football team as I have seen in the 8 years that I've been there. They are battling significant injuries in their secondary. Their front seven has not nearly been as stout and as consistent as what we've seen in previous years. Offensively, it's Jonathan Taylor or bust. The quarterback situation, you think it's bad here at Minnesota, or I encourage you to go watch a Wisconsin football game and try to watch their quarterback throw the ball right now, whether it's Hornibrook or whether it's Jack Cohen, it's not great. Then their playmakers on the outside aren't nearly as talented and nearly as consistent as what we've seen from Bateman and Johnson at times this year. So the question is going to be, and Bill Conley from SB Nation, I think, wrote about this perfectly. Minnesota is the most schizophrenic team in the country. You literally don't know on any given week what you're going to see. I think the month of November here has been a perfect example. You get blown out by Illinois. Illinois sucks. Illinois just lost 63-0 to Iowa. What do you do the next week? You win by, you're up 38 points in the fourth quarter to one of the hottest teams in the Big Ten at the time, Purdue, who had won five of their last six games. And then you have a game in between here with Northwestern where you don't play great, you don't play awful, you play average, and you're not going to beat the Big Ten West champion playing average. So the question is going to be, who do you expect to show up on Saturday? Do you expect to see the team that got blown up by Illinois? Do you expect to see the team that blew out Purdue? Or do you expect to see the team that offensively played mediocre, defensively played good, but overall as a team you play average? I think that's the toughest part about this Gopher team right now to project is that's why 18 to 22-year-olds in college football is so tough to get right, is because all three outcomes that you've looked at here in the month of November, I don't think any of us would have really projected that Minnesota would get boat raced by Illinois and then come back the next week and be up 38 points in the fourth quarter against a Purdue team that was pretty good. And then Northwestern comes to town and you hang tough with them all the way to the fourth quarter, and then all those miscues come back to bite you. Now, I can tell you Minnesota is not going to win in Madison if they continue to be dreadful in the take give, where Minnesota has given the ball away 21 times in eight Big Ten games. That's tied for the most in Big Ten play with Illinois, but they've only forced 10 turnovers on defense in eight Big Ten games, and that's just not going to get it done. That turnover margin for Minnesota is minus 11. That's terrible. We talk a lot about, and PJ Fleck talks about how the ball is the program. Well, the defense is enforcing turnovers, and the offense can't wait to give it away. So if Minnesota is somehow able to be plus one or plus, heaven forbid, plus two on Saturday, I think it's going to be an awfully interesting game here at Madison, because like I continue to lay out, there's nothing about this Wisconsin team that really scares me, especially the way that Minnesota has been able to stop the run here the last 2 weeks under Joe Rossi. Now, Wisconsin's offensive line is a different beast than anything that Minnesota has seen this year. They're going to need these defensive linemen, especially their defensive tackles, to be able to make sure that this offensive line for Wisconsin cannot get to the second level, cannot get to Cashman, Barber, Kamal, because I don't want to see Jonathan Taylor one-on-one with Jordan Houghton. That's not going to end well for Minnesota. So it's going to be about how well can this front seven play, and can the offense rebound and hopefully get that axe.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening as usual. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe. And also, if you enjoy it, please rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to us. Again, we want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.